Hello everyone, I'm Bo Yuan from University of Cambridge. I want to thank the organizers for making this great workshop possible. And today I will talk about our recent work on the effects of primordial black holes on first star formation. So today I will mainly focus on first star formation with stellar mass primordial black holes. And if we still have time in the end, I want to briefly discuss the scenario of massive galaxy formation seeded by supermassive primordial black holes. So let's begin with the background. And this is my summary of the basic properties of pop 3 stars. And you have probably seen these in many previous talks in this workshop. So here I only want to highlight 2 points. First, the halos hosting pop 3 star formation are basically determined by the criterion for efficient molecular cooling. And this halo mass is also regulated by environmental effects, such as streaming motion between dark matter and gas, and Lehmann-Werner feedback. And second, we know pop 3 stars are more massive than present-day stars, but recent simulations also show that fragmentation is common in these pop 3 star-forming disks. So the initial mass function of pop 3 stars is not just top-heavy, but also broad. So it's good to have pop 3 stars, then why do we care about primordial black holes? Primordial black holes have long been considered as a candidate, or at least an important component of dark matter. Their formation is well motivated theoretically by a variety of mechanisms, and this gives you a vast space of PBH models. And even if primordial black holes do not make up all dark matter, they can have interesting implications for many astrophysical phenomena, and these are used to derive constraints or evidence for primordial black holes from observations. For example, this figure from the review by Kerr et al. Shows basically the current observational constraints on the fraction of dark matter made up with primordial black holes as a function of the black hole mass. So in this vast space of PBH models, we are particularly interested in stellar mass primordial black holes. And the motivation is that recent gravitational wave observations of binary black hole mergers can be partially explained if these stellar mass primordial black holes make up a small fraction of dark matter. Because we see there is a secondary peak and also a high mass tail in the mass distribution of primary black holes in these black hole mergers. And these features can be explained by stellar mass primordial black holes. And the masses of these primordial black holes are also similar to the masses of the black hole remnants from pop 3 stars. So that's why I think it's really interesting to figure out how these primordial black holes will affect early star formation. So the effects of primordial black holes on early star formation can be classified generally into 2 categories. First, these primordial black holes will add additional perturbations to the primordial density field and accelerate structure formation. We have basically 2 sub-effects in this category. So if primordial black holes make up a small fraction of dark matter, around each primordial black hole, we will form a halo just because of the gravity of the primordial black hole. And the mass of this object bound to the primordial black hole grows linearly with the scale factor in the matter-dominated epoch. And this is called the seed effect. And on the other hand, if you have many primordial black holes, because they are discrete objects, the Poisson fluctuations of their number density at small scales will produce additional isocurvature perturbations. And collectively, these isocurvature perturbations can enhance the formation of structures that are even more massive than the halos seeded by individual primordial black holes. And this is called the Poisson effect. I call this gravitational effect from primordial black holes, we also have the effect So we also have non-gravitational effect, which is black hole accretion feedback. And there are many forms of feedback, and the feedback can be positive or negative depending on from model to model, from situation to situation. So the feedback from black holes itself is a complex topic itself, and it's still under investigation. So next, I will describe our models and their results on first star formation with stellar mass primordial black holes. And for simplicity here, we only consider the, we focus on the Poisson effect, and we only consider the heating of gas by absorption of ionizing photons from primordial black holes. Before I go into those details, I have to say our models are exploratory, and our results are tentative, because there are many assumptions and numerical treatments that may not be valid. So I will not give you a complete answer or complete picture of the subject, but I hope that I can at least demonstrate what theoretical ingredients we need to model, to study star formation with primordial black holes. And I want to share my outlook to future work in the end. So we start with case studies using cosmological simulations. And basically, we run two sets of zoom-in simulations in targeting typical first star-forming halos in overdense regions. We need zoom-in simulations because we want to achieve high resolution with like affordable computational cost. And we assume that all primordial black holes have the same mass, and we change the fraction of dark matter in primordial black holes. And this mass is chosen by this secondary peak in the primary mass distribution of binary black hole mergers. A great challenge of doing these kind of simulations is how to generate the initial conditions with primordial black holes. So ideally, we want to start a simulation deep in the radiation dominant epoch, when where these black holes really form. And also during that epoch, all the fluctuations are small and linear. But it is impossible if we want to simulate barons. So we can't simulate barons before recombination. So we have to start a simulation deep in the matter dominant epoch, which means that we have to do some extrapolation from the linear theory. And this will actually bring uncertainties in our results, and I will talk about them later. Okay, so how to produce this initial condition? So we first write down the equations in the linear perturbation theory. So to begin with, we assume that both primordial black holes and the ordinary dark matter, or I call it PDM, particle dark matter, they are all subject to the standard large-scale adiabatic perturbations. But for primordial black holes, we have this additional contribution from the Poisson noise, that's the isocurvature perturbations. And we further assume that the initial velocities between primordial black holes and PDM are negligible, so that the difference between the overdensity field of these two components is constant. So given these assumptions, we can write down the evolution of overdensity as the summation of two terms from the adiabatic perturbations and isocurvature perturbations for both the entire dark sector, all the individual components. So
the assumption of the no velocity between the dark matter and the black holes, is there an assumption built into the PBH formation mechanism?
I think so. I think these are the most standard pathway, just like collapse of overdensities from inflation.
And you're starting with the sort of inflationary power spectrum and then getting
yes. And if you have more complex models, yes, these will be different. But we start with the most, the simplest case. Given these equations, the basic idea to produce an initial condition with primordial black holes is we start with a reference IC for lambda CDM. And in this IC, the standard adiabatic perturbations are already captured by the density and velocity fields of these PDM particles. And then we add primordial black holes into this IC with three steps. We first derive the overdensity field of PDM on a grid with a size, cell size, such that on average you have one PBH inside a cell. And then we draw the number of primordial black holes in each cell with a Poisson distribution whose parameter is proportional to the density of PDM in the cell. And then we just randomly place the given number of primordial black holes in the cell. And finally, we assign a velocity to each PBH as the velocity of its nearest neighbor PDM particle. And here, the procedures highlighted in red and blue correspond to the terms, the adiabatic and isocurvature terms in the linear perturbation equation. And that's for primordial black holes. So next, we further need to implement the perturbations on particle dark matter from the primordial black holes. And for this, we use the Zeldovich approximation. The basic idea is to associate the displacement and velocity fields produced by primordial black holes with the acceleration field of the primordial black holes, which can be derived from the positions of the primordial black holes we produced in the last step. But there are several pieces of in this model that are kind of uncertain. So first, we need to set the growth factor of this PBH perturbations. And for simplicity, I just use a naive extrapolation of the standard solution of this self-similar evolution of overdensity in the linear regime, which is proportional to the scale factor in a matter-dominated epoch. And another problem is that because we start a simulation already kind of late in the matter-dominated epoch, the perturbations close to the primordial black holes are already nonlinear. So I solved this problem by truncating the displacement with the resolution scale in the initial condition. So in this way, we kind of ensure linearity in the initial condition, but we will reduce the seed effect at the early stage. And finally, the scale or range of PBH perturbations is also uncertain because in principle, we only expect the perturbations from primordial black holes to be important at small scales. But so at large scales, the adiabatic perturbations will take over. But where exactly, at which scale this will happen, I think I'm not sure. So we just explore four different cases. And that's the gravitational effect. For non-gravitational effect, black hole accretion and heating, we simply use this Bondi accretion formula to derive the accretion rate. And then we associate the accretion rate with the heating rate with a radiative efficiency and the thermal coupling coefficient. For this radiative efficiency, we use a formula that is a function of the Eddington ratio to capture the translation of the accretion disk geometry. And for this thermal coupling coefficient, we calibrate this parameter with detailed radiative transfer calculations. Okay. And now we can look at some results.
How do you assign the spin of these black holes, or you don't care about that?
Oh, we assume no spin almost. So because most PBH models predict almost no spin for model black holes. And that's why it's like the sin dex radiative efficiency is just like 0.057 for Schwarzschild black holes. Yes?
Do they grow by your accretion?
Yeah, they will grow by accretion. But from the simulation, we see they grow by less than 10%. So the spin will not increase much in according to our simulation. But of course, if our simulations are wrong, then maybe they grow more. Because these primordial black holes are still not so massive. That's why they don't grow much. Results. So here I will talk about the results in one zoom-in region because the results for the other region are almost similar. And we stop the simulation when the maximum hydrogen number density is above 10 to 5 cubic centimeter. So this stopping criterion is meant to capture the onset of first star formation. And I will show you actually this criterion does a good job. And we stop the simulation there, and we focus on the properties of the halo that hosts this density peak to figure out how the condition of first star formation is changed by primordial black holes. And here, we first look into the gravitational and non-gravitational effects separately, and then combine them for the fiducial model with this FPBH. And this plot shows the projected distribution of particle dark matter gas and primordial black holes. And the circle is the zero radius of the halo. So you can see if we only consider the heating effect, no perturbations, star formation is delayed and shifted to a more massive halo by primordial black holes. But if instead we only consider the perturbations but ignore feedback, star formation will be significantly accelerated but happens in a smaller halo. But if we combine the heating and the perturbations, star formation is accelerated, but it happens in a more massive halo. This just shows the complex interplay between these two effects.
Sorry, but what? So you are
agreeing to light
and heating. What? How do you
look in this paper? Oh, I use the one model from a paper from And it's basically when the accretion rate is high, you have the thin disk. And the thin disk model is like the temperature of the disk is different, is a function of scale, of radius. And you add up the black body spectrum at each radius. That's the thin disk model. And if the accretion rate is low, we are in this regime called advection-dominated accretion flow, ADF. And then you have a spectrum, I think, dominated by inverse Compton scattering. So we have some models there.
Is this spectrum mostly hard, for instance, in this area, mostly meaning hard B and soft B stars?
Mostly X-rays, I think, but also UV.
The radiation accretion disk is well known in many cases. You will process down to optical infrared. For instance, the Carolina example is the radiation is reprocessed down to optical. It's mostly instant. Because there's gas outside of the disk, and then just the light hits the gas outside of the disk, so the energy is reprocessed down.
Well, that's in the present day universe when you have dust and metals, but here we don't have dust. So the primordial gas can only really efficiently absorb the ionizing photons. But of course, they can. So the other less energetic photons will have some effects, and I will talk about them later. So that's for like an experiment. And then we look into how the effects will depend on the fraction of dark matter in primordial black holes. And here we see first star formation is accelerated by primordial black holes if FPBH is less than 0.1%. But star formation will be delayed to increasingly more massive halos if we have more primordial black holes when this FPBH is above 1%. And also, this case with a really small FPBH is special because we see now star formation is accelerated, but it happens in a smaller halo. And there is no primordial black hole within the real radius of this halo. And that's why I say this case is special. And my explanation is that the collapse of this halo is accelerated by this nearby halo induced by primordial black holes, like the tidal fields from this nearby halo just does that. And the internal structure of the first star forming halos is also changed by primordial black holes. So here, the top left figure shows the gas density profiles in the CDM case and these four PBH models. And the top right panel shows the enclosed mass profiles for gas, PDM, and also primordial black holes. Interestingly, we see in the central parsec, the gas distribution is almost identical in all these simulations. But if you go to outer part of the halo between like 1 to 10 parsec, the gas density is higher in PBH models. And my explanation is that the collapse of the halo or of the cloud is actually slower there. So the gas is piled up there because of the heating of the primordial black holes. And then another interesting outcome is that the central density of PDM is reduced by primordial black holes. And I think this is caused by the dynamical heating of primordial black holes and also the substructures around them. And the distributions of primordial black holes themselves is almost isothermal at the outer part of the halo, but the density profile in the central region is much, much shallower. And the reason, actually, if you really look into this, there are many few primordial black holes that can get close to the center of the halo. In the bottom figures, I show how the gas temperature and abundances of electrons and hydrogen molecules depend on the gas density in the gas shells around the central density peak. And you see at the outer region of the halo, temperature is generally higher because star formation is shifted to more massive halos with higher viral temperature by primordial black holes. And the abundance of molecular hydrogen is increased by primordial black holes because of the heating and ionization by the primordial black holes. And also we see large temporal variations in the central density profile. And I think the reason is that we only have a few primordial black holes in the center, so that these properties are sensitive to the stochastic environments around this small number of primordial black holes. Okay, maybe I go cluster stuff. This, so now I can summary the key findings from our simulations. So we see the typical condition of top three star formation is fulfilled in all simulations with similar gas density profiles in the central parsec. And this is independent of the abundance of primordial black holes. So this means that the standard picture of top three star formation is not changed by primordial black holes. However, these primordial black holes do have some effects. So they can slow down the clot collapse and reduce the central density of PDM. And this effect is stronger when we have more primordial black holes. And this is caused by the accretion and dynamical heating from primordial black holes and the PDM structures around them. And finally, at the onset of first star formation, we see all primordial black holes are at least one parsec away from the gas density peak. And this can be explained by a survivorship bias. And because gas can only cool and condense if you don't have a nearby primordial black hole that destroys things. And then we further calculate the dynamical friction timescale for a primordial black hole to sink into the center. And it is actually a few million years. And this is larger than the freefall timescale of this star-forming clump, but comparable to the typical lifetimes of pop-3 stars and relaxation timescales of pop-3 star clusters. This means that primordial black holes are not expected to interact with the pop-3 star-forming disk, but they can still affect pop-3 star evolution and the dynamics of pop-3 star clusters. So these are the results from the zoom-in simulations. And they are sensitive to the specific halo assembly histories in the zoom-in region. So we cannot naively generalize these results. So to further evaluate the global impact of primordial black holes on first star formation, we developed a semi-analytical model. And there are two ingredients in this model. First, we calculate the halo mass function from the PS formalism. And to do that, we need to write down the power spectrum. And it is straightforward to write down the power spectrum like in a linear regime consider without any correlation between the adiabatic and isocurvature terms. But this is not enough. So we found that you cannot reproduce simulations with this. So we need to introduce a correlation term to better agree with simulations. And the physical meaning of this correlation term is that as the clustering of primordial black holes grows by the adiabatic perturbations, the isocurvature perturbations from the primordial host will also be enhanced. And this is just some examples of the power spectrum. And you see the small scale power is enhanced by primordial black holes. And this correlation term is most important in the intermediate case with like 0.1% of primordial black holes in dark matter. However, even with this correlation term, the agreement between simulations and the PS formalism is not perfect. And here I just compare the results in simulations and the analytical model. And you see for CDM, the blue dots and curve here, the agreement is great. But for PBH models, we have two discrepancies. First, the number of small halos is overproduced by this analytical model. And I think the reason is that the tidal fields from this PBH-induced halos will actually reduce the formation of small scale structures. And this is not captured by the analytical model. Another discrepancy is that when the abundance of primordial black holes is large, the number of massive halos is also overproduced by the PS formalism. And my explanation is that these bound structures, tightly bound structures seeded by primordial black holes, can delay the assembly of larger halos. And this is actually consistent with previous findings, the results of previous simulations that the nonlinear growth of large-scale fluctuations caused by primordial black holes is slower than expected from the extrapolation of the linear theory. Okay, so that's the first ingredient, the halo mass function. The second ingredient is the halo mass threshold above which stars can form. And here I just used a standard criteria, so this mass is determined by equating the cooling timescale and the freefall timescale. And now I just introduced a new heating term from primordial black holes in the cooling timescale formula. And I also consider the enhancement of H2 abundance by the heating and ionization of primordial black holes. And here are the results. So, and we see indeed, as expected, with primordial black holes, that this halo mass threshold is increased. And here I also plot the masses of halos at the onset of first star formation from the zoom-in simulations with these data points. And they are generally consistent with the analytical results. For comparison, I also show this brown curve. That is the halo mass threshold under the influence of standard or particular or typical environmental effects from streaming motion and Lehmann-Wiener background. And this curve is above all our results. And this actually indicates that the effect of premodal black holes is overwhelmed by the standard effects in lambda CDM in most cases. And now we can combine these two ingredients to integrate the halo mass function over the proper mass range for pop 3 star formation to calculate the cosmic stellar density, stellar mass density, from this analytical model. And we assume the star formation efficiency is constant. And the left figure here shows the ratio of the stellar density in the PBH model and in the CDM model as a function of redshift without the environmental effects from Lehmann-Wiener background and streaming motion. And in the red figure, we further consider this environmental effects. And you can see the dependence of the ratio on, say, the FPBH is kind of complex. And it is sensitive to whether you have this correlation term or whether you have these environmental effects. But the variation of this star formation, this stellar mass density, is within a factor of 3 below redshift 30 for all PBH models that are allowed by observational constraints. So in summary, we found that premodal black holes accelerate early structure formation, but meanwhile increase the halo mass threshold for star formation with heating. And when we combine these two competing effects and also further consider the environmental effects from Lehmann-Wiener background and streaming motion, we conclude that the impact of premodal black holes on first star formation is minor. But another interesting finding is that this PS formalism cannot fully capture the nonlinear dynamics and a non-Gaussianity caused by premodal black holes in structure formation, even if we have this correlation term. So it is really non-trivial to have an accurate analytical model for the halo mass functions in PBH cosmologies. And then I have to say our results are not very accurate because we only consider the heating of ionizing photons from premodal black holes. And in future work, we should in principle consider more effects like the Lehmann-Wiener photons and X-rays from premodal black holes, because we know this Lehmann-Wiener radiation can dissociate H2 and increase the halo mass threshold. And in some extreme cases, if we have very strong Lehmann-Wiener radiation, we can trigger the formation of massive black hole seeds. And for X-rays, these X-rays can enhance the formation of H2 and then decrease the halo mass threshold and also reduce the star formation efficiency. That would be an interesting direction for future work. I will skip this. And another direction of improvement is we need better initial conditions. So the current model only considers the Poisson effect, and the seed effect will be underestimated in the early stage. And I just came up with a new model to better combine the seed and Poisson effects in the IC. And the basic idea is to use a new truncation for the perturbation from the nearest PBH, like this. And in this way, we will create a uniform sphere of PDM with an overdensity of, like, for typical dark matter halos around each premodal black hole. That's one improvement. And another thing I found by numerical experiments is that we actually need a smaller growth factor to reproduce this bond mass evolution in simulations for a single premodal black hole. And I tested these new IC with some dark matter only simulations. So the top two figures just show you how we can reproduce this mass growth of the halo seeded by a single premodal black hole. And this is independent of the initial redshift. And the bottom two figures, the left figure shows that in the early stage, the mass and abundance of these PBH seeded structures are well reproduced. And in the right figure here, we see the halo mass function in the late stage dominated by the Poisson effect is consistent with the prediction of the PS formalism in the expected mass range. Okay. I think that's all for stellar mass free model black holes. And I'm happy to answer questions. And if we have time in the end, we can I can talk about the next the next topic. Yeah.
A naive question. Can you not just stick the different probability distribution into the same formalism mathematically? I mean, is there a reason you can't do that?
Do you mean the PS formalism?
Yeah.
I mean, I did that, but it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't agree with the simulations.
Okay.
I think it is because these black holes, they are discrete objects. They are very different from the perturbations in...
I mean, the original Prashchekhar work sort of assumes discrete objects that build up into bigger things, right? Like the actual Prashchekhar paper. I mean, they didn't know what the fluctuations were originally, so.
I think another thing I need to mention is that the PS formalism assume that the density fluctuations are not Gaussian.
Well, it doesn't have to.
Really? But
I mean, you put that in by hand, but.
Yes, we can change that. We can change that.
Yes.
That would be a good way to try to improve this. So
I think that in the simulations Prashchekhar did, they actually had discrete. I mean, they were thinking more of early, you know, machos or something, right? So.
Ah, yes, but I think they treat those things as a pressureless fluid.
Mm-hmm.
But here we have really concrete discrete objects as black holes.
Here, I guess you have two components, so it's sort of,
yes, yeah. Yes. It's like in their original simulations, they don't really resolve the individual objects.
Yeah, I mean, their particles are basically.
Yeah, yeah. But here we have these black holes that are massive enough.
Okay.
Okay.
The Poisson effect you're talking about, is that specific to the way in which you're generating
Yes, it's related. So if here I just use the simplest case, I assume these black holes are randomly distributed at small scales. But if you have additional clustering beyond that, according to a certain formation mechanism for free model black holes, then of course the Poisson effect will be different. We have to implement that.
So it's based on the power spectrum of primordial perturbations.
Kind of, it's like we assume this is a Poisson noise. It's like just a flat thing in the, just a flat.
Okay. Yeah, here. I'm wondering if you produce them not during inflation, if you produce them somewhat.
Yeah, this will be different, I
it
think.
So. They just still get some kind of effect because of the power spectrum.
Yeah.
The reason is that this is just like one shot, it's literally shot. But if you produce your mother combination, then you have more density of, say, of the black hole, but then you have an under density around it. So the point light effect is three. You see? So it's only for things produced during radiation domination.
Or it's like the earlier, or if you produce them in a later epoch, the effects will be weaker.
Right.
I think. But above radiation dominant epoch is almost the same because structures do not grow during radiation.
Right.
Sorry for that question. Do you simulation account for merger of primordial black holes?
Not yet. We can't resolve that.
You can't resolve that.
Yeah.
Do you think that's important or?
That's important if you want to study gradual waves.
Yeah.
But for the effect on for first star formation, I think that is not very important because. So here I show the results with a fixed mass of primordial black holes, but actually in our paper we try another mass.
Yeah.
But the results are almost the same.
But you're getting intuition, or you're getting like guidance from what LIGO see, right?
That would be a little bit, right?
Because you the mass function, right?
Yeah, that would be interesting, but it will be difficult to do it in simulations, in this kind of simulations. We just don't have the resolution. Okay. So I still have 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounded like, so years and years ago, you know, if you were looking for signatures of primordial or other black holes, there are huge uncertainties in how much light you might get from the accretion around them. It sounded from what you were saying like that's better constrained now, or there's a better understanding of how much, you know.
I have to say no.
No,
but
okay.
But we use a very simple model. And the good thing of this model is that we capture, I think, the basic trend. So this tells you the relative efficiency will be lower if you have a lower accretion rate. And I think we probably all astronomers, we can agree on this. But how exactly this, like the exact form can be different from model to model. So we capture this general trend and then we calibrate this coefficient by some relative transfer calculations. So in this calculation, we cap the spectrum and we just calculate how much photons, how much energy will be absorbed. And we get this value. And then we change this value actually by one order of magnitude in our simulations. And the results are almost the same.
Okay.
Because
it is still very uncertain.
Yeah. We have uncertainties here, but this is not very important for first star formation because the feedback can be self-regulated. It's like you increase the efficiency and you heat the gas more and then you also accrete less. It's like, yeah. So if I still have 8 minutes.
If you would like to take that time.
Yeah, because I can talk about the other interesting part. yeah. So now we move out of the stellar mass regime and we go to supermassive regime. And the motivation here is, I think this is also mentioned in the talk by Julian. JWST seems to discover a population of unusually massive galaxies at high redshift. And these galaxies are hard to explain in most models for lambda CDM. But these galaxies can actually form if structure formation is accelerated by these supermassive primordial black holes. And the mergers of these supermassive primordial black holes can also contribute to the stochastic gravitational wave background at low frequency detected by the pulsar timing arrays. So it's interesting to consider this scenario. And here I just want to focus on one particular object. So this galaxy is observed actually at low redshift, but the spectrum of this galaxy is consistent with an old stellar population formed at above redshift 11 with a very high stellar mass. And this galaxy is not expected to occur in lambda CDM until redshift 6, but we see it at redshift 11. So what if this galaxy forms in a massive halo seeded by a massive primordial black hole? And it turns out that we can derive the PDH parameters required to explain this galaxy easily from a toy model. We just have compared the number density of the galaxy with the number density of primordial black holes, and we require that we can form enough mass of stars in this halo. And then we see a tiny fraction of dark matter in these supermassive primordial black holes can actually explain this galaxy. But we have an important free parameter in this toy model, that is the star formation efficiency. So if the star formation efficiency is lower, we need more extreme PBH models to explain this galaxy. So to figure out whether we can really form this galaxy with a reasonable star formation efficiency, I run some idealized simulations with single primordial black hole using a REPL with the illustrious TNG subgrid models. And the top left figure here shows how the Eddington ratio of the black hole accretion evolves with time, and also how the star formation rate evolves with time. And the right figure shows almost the same thing, but now we have the total mass of stars in the galaxy. And you see there is a strong initial starburst, which correlates with high accretion rates of the halo. But later on, the star formation rate and accretion rate of the black hole drop because of gas depletion. And meanwhile, the feedback from the black hole starts to drive outflows, as you can see here from the projected temperature distribution. And these outflows further decrease the black hole accretion and star formation rate. And eventually, the galaxy is quenched at redshift 30-ish, and the resulting mass of stars is consistent with the observation, with a star formation efficiency of 10% at redshift 10. So this is really interesting. Also, this simulation is consistent with the scenario put forward by a recent paper by Joseph Silk. So this, in this scenario, the feedback from the black hole cannot reduce star formation in the early stage because the system is so compact and the feedback is confined and cooling is so efficient so that you still form stars. And this is consistent with the initial phase. But later on, eventually, as the universe expands, the feedback from the black hole will break out and finally quench star formation. So our simulation is just consistent with this scenario. But finally, I have to say, despite this seeming success, the subgrid models in illustrious TNG are probably oversimplified. So I will not really buy this result. So we need better subgrid models, just better models for the baryonic physics to figure out whether we can really form this kind of galaxy. And also to really predict the observational signatures of these kind of galaxies in PBH-seeded structures. Okay. All right, we still have four more minutes.
This is a low-mass galaxy, sorry, low-redshift galaxy, but star formation history is telling you that it should have formed at redshift.
Yes.
This star formation history is from the spectra or from?
From the spectrum. So this red and green, they are the posterior distribution or the star formation history inferred from two SPS models. And this green, this blue curve is the oldest galaxy in TNG 300. And you see for this galaxy, it does not form stars early enough to match the observation. And these two black curves, they are basically the number density of halos that are massive enough to host this galaxy with a given star formation efficiency as a function of redshift. And this gray band is the number density of this object from observations. And you look at the intersection here, you conclude, okay, you can only form this galaxy at redshift 6 or 4 from lambda CDM, but we see it here.
Just caveat is that getting star formation history is notoriously difficult. So.
Yes. Of course, there are many assumptions here, like the initial mass function, dust, metallicity. But maybe if we see more such things with JWST, then we will consider the PBH scenario more seriously.
So this is, is this a very rare PBH then? Is the idea you're only making that one in this very large volume, or is it just this one happened to make a galaxy around it?
I think for this particular object, we will say it's rare. Like only in a large volume, we have one supermassive primordial black hole to do this.
Is that a natural thing to get out of
inflation?
Black holes. I mean, can you adjust the abundance arbitrarily or?
Almost. In some models, you have, in some models of inflation, you can have almost monotonic mass distribution. It's like you form primordial black holes with almost the same mass. And you can tune that model to give you just this mass, and I think just this abundance.
So you can tune the abundance separately. I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, you get the one that's in the early galaxy, and that's great, but what about all the other ones?
It's a good question.
Merge and so on, then you wind up with a mess because you wind up with black holes that aren't in galaxies or go through galaxies, and you start to see, you know, if these things weren't centered
in
galaxies, you would run into observational problems at low redshift, right? So
that it will be interesting. So we really, if we want to consider this scenario seriously, we need to not just for one galaxy, we need to simulate like the phenomena at other scales. But for this one particular galaxy, I can still argue that the black hole is obscured. But indeed, if we really want to validate this model, we need to make more predictions and compare with more observations, like, say, realization. If you have too many such black holes, it will screw up realization, right? And there are other effects.
Okay.